Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ground ball down the third baseline. Fair ball. One run is in. Castellanos scores. Racing over to third base is Caratini. He rounds third. He's coming home. And Horner slides into third base. Safe. A two-run triple for Nico Horner. And the Cubs extend the lead. 6-2 now over the Padres in the fifth. His first two RBIs as a big leaguer.
Fun to get a chance to do it all. Yeah, being playing defense in the middle of the field, whether it's short, second, or center, you can make a difference in the game even when you're not hitting. And so it was awesome early on to get as many plays as I did and have a chance to make a difference early on. And that really helped me going forward.
Mulliott Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. It is it's interesting to look at the Cubs and Nico Horner. And again, not the savior, just the spark, but they need a savior. Let's get out to Jim Callis. He joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram hotline, home of the real deal. Jim, of course, MLB.com, MLB Network, MLB Pipeline. Good morning, Jim. How are you this morning? Good
morning, Jim.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
We're doing well, and we're trying to figure out what we have here in Nico Horner and what the comparisons are. Hilarious that after the first game, everyone's talking about, Ryan Sandberg has come again. And now
Wow. Now yeah. We
can hesitate a little and stop comparing him to Hall of Famers. But appreciate that he's a pretty good player and a good young player and a guy that came off his couch and helped them win a game. And now here you go with him in the lineup.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I think we're going to see what we're going to see now isn't going to be what you're going to see when he arrives more like along the lines of when he was supposed to, which might be toward the end of next year. But, you know, really with the situation they were in with Baez getting hurt and then Russell getting hurt, his bat is his, you know, what stands out about him. But it was really his defense, I think, is the main reason they called him up, because I guess the other options on the roster right now to play shortstop would have been David Bote and Ben Zobrist. And that's, I mean, those guys are good players, but those guys are not good shortstops. So what you're getting now is a guy who can kind of play, you know, a competent shortstop. And he's gifted enough as a hitter, even though he's been kind of rushed to the big leagues. He's had some injuries, only played 89 games in the minors. They took him in the first round. He's not going to be overwhelmed. You know, we saw that with three hits the first night. I mean, he's one of the better hitting prospects, not just in the Cubs system, but in the minors. He really excels at putting the bat on the ball, and he's got some deceptive power. You know, I think it'll be 15 to 20 home run power. You know, once he's fully established, he might be a 20-20 guy because he can run a little bit too. And I do think he winds up at second base in the long run. But right now, you know, it's funny. If you told me even a month ago that Nico Horner's going to get called up to the Cubs because of his glove, I would have been like, what? Like, well, what scenario is that going to happen in? But that's kind of what happened here.
Coming out of Stanford, he wasn't a consensus first-round projection, Jim. And was that basically because of the lack of power at Stanford? And defensively, if you had to describe, you know, what he does best, I don't know that that strikes me as a strong arm as much as he's pretty sure about where the ball is going. So he's dependable in that way. But I wouldn't say that. Do you think his arm strength is an issue?
Yeah. The big reason he wasn't a consensus first round. It's funny because, I mean, when the Cubs took him 24th, you know, there were some teams who were like, oh, that was kind of higher than we thought. I think most people saw him as like a supplemental to early second round pick. And then when guys saw him in the fall league, you had pro scouts who hadn't seen him as an amateur. Everybody in the fall league I talked to last year, and he really tore it up, was asking me, like, how'd this guy last 24 picks? Like this guy's too good to have been the 24th pick in the draft. And, you know, he hit, I think it was, what, like three homers in 3 years at Stanford. The Cubs have already, like, worked with him to change his swing a little bit. And he's such a gifted hitter that, you know, with some guys, that, you know, that's easier said than done. But he's been able to make some adjustments. He did have a broken wrist when he got hit by a pitch, so his power numbers were down this year. But I think he will have more power. Even the Cubs were pleasantly surprised at how much he showed the ability to drive the ball with wood bats. And, you know, defensively, yeah, you're right about his arm. It's probably an average to solid arm by shortstop standards. His range is probably average by shortstop standards. You know, the best things about him defensively, shortstop, like I said, it's basically competent. You know, he has good hands. He has good instincts. He has good baseball IQ. He makes accurate throws. So he's the type of guy who can do, you know, well, what he's doing now, you know, he's being asked to do now, which is hold down shortstop. You know, he'll be probably, you know, around an average defender maybe at shortstop. And most teams want a better than average, you know, defender at shortstop, which is why I think you'll see you'll see him move to second base, you know, potentially center field in the long run. But he's probably going to be a second baseman, I think, in the long run, and Javi Baez would be your shortstop.
Jim, it's fun to watch the prospect lists and to see the ever-shifting sands of who's moving up and who's moving down. And as a White Sox fan, I'm concentrating on that sort of thing. We know Louis Robert has been unbelievable, had an unbelievable year going through three levels in the minor leagues. There was a thought that if they were going to bring him up, they probably should have done it at the halfway point. They should have probably done it at the All-Star break, but they didn't do it, and he was killing it down in the minors, but the Sox were kind of falling apart at the time. And I understand time of service and why you wait on guys and all that, but Louis Robert is going to press there that next year, I would imagine. He looks like he's the real deal.
Yeah, no, he does. I mean, it's fun. We picked him as our minor league player of the year. You know, he was the first guy to have a 30-30 season with 300 total bases since, it took me a while to look this up, since Jose Cardenal in 1961. And I mean, his combination of power and speed is unbelievable. And yeah, I mean, I'm like you. I don't blame the White Sox for not calling him up, because the way this CBA, the way the rules work now, it doesn't make sense to call him up. And honestly, I mean, the guy's got a $26 million bonus when he signed, so you're probably not going to get the guy. You know, Robert's probably not going to sign like an 8-year deal before he gets to the big leagues and give away free agency. He's got no incentive to do that because he's already got a lot of money. But yeah, I hope this changes in the next CBA to where guys will get called up on merit, because I do think that the flip side of that argument is, you know, I keep saying this, and I mean, one of these years it'll come true, but like, your teams with good farm systems often contend a year earlier than expected. So I think there's a potential when you look at some of the pitchers who broke through for the White Sox, and maybe they make some moves in the offseason, and some of the position players, especially Moncada, took a step forward, and maybe Andrew Vaughn's ready pretty quick, but maybe they're kind of a surprise contender. I don't think the AL Central is a juggernaut division by any means, and I do think there's some positive aspects to, yeah, okay, you would have gotten a service time clock ticking, but like, why not give Luis Robert the final, you know, month of the season in the big leagues so he gets acclimated? So instead of having to kind of learn on the fly, you know, like Eloy Jimenez did this year, you know, maybe his acclimation goes a little bit easier if he's up in September. So I think teams lose sight of that. I understand why they do it. It's a business decision. But, you know, hopefully that'll get addressed in the next CBA. Because I also just don't think it's a great look for baseball as a sport when we all know that these guys belong in the big leagues and teams have to sit there. And, like, I like Rick Hahn, and I think Rick Hahn does a good job. But sit there and tell us, well, you know, it's been a trying year because he moved up twice. Like, come on. Like, really? Like, I've never heard that one before. He's already had two promotions this year, so there's been a lot going on, so we're going to shut him down. Like, I'm not buying that one.
And aren't those service time considerations what make the Cubs situation with Horner even more surprising, or maybe came out of left field for us because you expected them to be, you know, use that as the argument of
keeping
Nico
Horner down? It was kind of desperate, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a sign of the desperation they're in.
Yeah, it's, you know, they're trying to win now, and he was their best defensive option shortstop. The other thing is, too, I do think with Nico, you know, providing he stays healthy and he's been banged up and you know, getting hit by a pitch is not much you can do, and damaging your thumb diving for a ball or something. You know, it's not like these are chronic injuries. But I think had he been healthy next year, I really think he would have pushed for a midseason promotion. So, like, it would have been kind of tough where, hey, look, the Cubs are trying to win. He's ready to help them. I mean, I really do think he could be their best second base option by midseason next year. So he was already going to have like a half year of service time. So this probably won't affect things in the long run. You know, maybe it affects arbitration eligibility, but you can massage that a little bit too.
So Jim, when we talk about the White Sox possibly contending, we know that they've got two players, two really good players, hopefully, and Louis Robert, who'll be up quick. And of course, Michael Kopech coming back from injury. What about a guy like Madrigal? You know, I don't want to lump them in with Louis Robert because we keep talking about the two of them because they were at the same level, but Madrigal, a little different sitch. Is he ready in 2020?
Yeah, he probably is. I say this all the time when I get asked, but I still struggle to figure out exactly what he's going to be. I mean, what was his strikeout rate in the minors this year? Like 4%? I mean, he's probably, we knew this coming out of the draft, And then, you know, that he was the best hitter, you know, contact hitter in that draft, you know, in 2018. I think he's the best contact hitter anywhere in the minors. And it is just, you know, I think his floor is very high. I think this guy is going to hit around 300. I think he's going to play Gold Glove caliber second base, or at least an above average second base. And he can run, and he could probably steal, you know, 25 or so bases. I just don't know how much he's going to drive the ball. Like, you know, I think he hit, you know, 311 or 320 in the minors this year, and he didn't even have an 800 op. So, like, I don't know if it's going to be a huge impact with power, you know, if that's going to detract from it a little bit. But I do think he's ready. I mean, I think you could put him in the lineup right now, and, you know, I think we'll probably go through this next year with him too. You know, there'll be something Nick has to work on for a couple weeks to delay his free agency. And I think Andrew Vaughn's going to be going through this next year too. I really think Andrew Vaughn can get there quick as well. So it'll be interesting to see when they bring these guys up. But I don't know. I mean, Madrigal made, you know, a couple jumps this year and hit very, I mean, I know they're using the jacked up major league ball in AAA, but I mean, he hit in AA, he hit in AAA. I don't really think he's got much left to prove in the minors. I mean, he's been, I think, exactly who the White Sox and everybody else thought he was going to be, you know, so far in his pro career. I mean, I don't think there's anything that's been surprising about his development, how quick he's moved.
If the Cubs face this offseason reckoning that everybody expects and they have to assess the state of their minor league system, what word best describes it?
You know, I guess I would say thin. But I also think, like saying that, it doesn't mean it's bereft of talent. I mean, you go through cycles, and, you know, look, they traded some very good players to get, you know, Aroldis Chapman, who helped them win a World Series, and to get Quintana, and they've made some other moves. And, yeah, that doesn't mean the system's empty. I mean, Nico Horner's, you know, we're seeing him now. I think he'll be ready at some point next year. You know, Miguel Amaya's probably a couple years away, but he's one of the better catching prospects in the minors. They've got, you know, a couple guys who I think Cubs fans are starting to hear about. You know, Braylon Marquez is a lefty who's always had a live arm, and it got more live. You know, his stuff even increased this year. And he just took off in the second half, threw a lot more strikes. I mean, he could be that impact pitcher we've been waiting for the Cubs to develop. Alzolay, if he can stay healthy, could have some kind of role. And they've got an exciting guy who kept, you know, getting hit on the finger, so he missed a lot of time. But a kid named Brendan Davis in low class A, who has a chance to be a big time power speed guy, you know, a ways away from reaching the ceiling. This guy was a former, you know, state basketball defensive player of the year in Arizona and a basketball standout, and the bat was more advanced than people thought. So they have guys, they just don't have the depth they used to. You know, I said this, you know, I guess it's been 5 or 6 years now, but, you know, when these guys were coming to Chicago, the guys who eventually won the World Series, I thought the Cubs had the best collection of position player prospects I've ever seen in 30 years of covering this stuff. And you just can't, you know, you go through cycles of, you know, rebuilding and then contending. And it's hard once you contend, especially with the new rules that limit spending on the draft and internationally, you know, you can't do as much. I mean, in fact, I mean, we all know, I mean, Theo was kind of, I think, disappointed, you know, after he took the Cubs job, they changed the CBA and they couldn't do what they did in Boston, which was basically spend whatever they wanted on the draft. Because, I mean, I think that was part of his plan, you know, for the Cubs. And once they started winning, you know, that they've had, you know, small bonus pools. But, you know, they're going to have to still look for outside help. The system is thin, but there are some interesting guys in it.
Hey, thanks a ton. We appreciate it, Jim. Always great catching up with you. Love the knowledge. Really
thanks,
appreciate
Jim.
It.
Appreciate it.
Hey, great talking to you guys, too. Thanks.
That's Jim Callis, MLB.com, MLB Network, and, of course, MLB Pipeline, where you find all his stuff. And he does a remarkable
job. Giving you a little hope for the White Sox.
You know, I'm all pumped up because it's like, they got to go out and spend some money and sign some guys, but they got three guys that they're going to be bringing up next year for sure, right? And then you add a couple guys in free agency. All of a sudden, the depth of that team and the quality of that team gets better.
We will shift gears, talk college football next with Houston Nutt from CBS Sports.
It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We're delighted to welcome in Houston Nutt. He joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram Hotline, home of the real deal. Houston, of course, CBS Sports College football analyst. Good morning, Houston. How are you?
Morning, Houston.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Well, you know, help us out. Are we going to be who will be this week's Tennessee? Who will we be talking about in terms of the Titanic, as opposed to talking about in terms of their national championship credentials?
Oh my goodness, man! That's a that, you, boy. Y'all start off. Y'all start off with a, getting y'all want to bring all the Titanic down on the very first question, huh? Well, I tell you what, it's got to be tough. You know, we look at Tennessee, and I look at the tradition, and remember all the great years they had, and you open up against Georgia State, and then BYU. That's a tough way to go, and so, man, that's the thing about football, boy. You don't ever know; it bounces funny, and hopefully they can get their first win this week and get back on track a little bit.
Houston, you look at Jalen Hurts at Oklahoma, you look at Tua, obviously, Alabama. There have been other quarterbacks that have made an impact, but has there been any player in college football affect his team as much as Joe Burrow has done at LSU? And everything that Burrow brings to the table in terms of poise, he was really polished against Texas, really made an impact.
Without question. Boy, I tell you what, to go on the road, and remember now, Texas has a lot of momentum, and they beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, and the words were, hey, we're back. And you know their fans were ready to play every game, every down with them, and the team too. And Sam Ehlinger, they all look good. But you're right. Joe Burrow, to go in that environment, 31 for 39, over 400 yards, it just looks different. Where we're used to seeing in years past, okay, we're just going to be nice and simple, vanilla, hand it here, hand it right, hand it left, punt it, let the defense play. But, boy, not this year. Different formations, spreading it out, and throwing on first down. And then that third and 17 to me was the staple of the night, where you got Joe Burrow, third and 17, steps up just to buy a little bit of time and throws a strike to Jefferson. And, of course, Jefferson hits the corner and outruns everybody down the sideline for the touchdown. That was just, that was fun to watch. But I'm with you on that one. Joe Burrow, to me, is a true difference maker and a true leader right now. And I got to give a lot of credit to Ed Orgeron. When you look at, he hires Coach Brady, you've got Steve Ensminger, who's been there. And sometimes you can get too many, cooks in the kitchen. I thought the way they're working together, outstanding.
When you look at a team like Michigan, and they win a game 24-21 over Army, and yet the style points aren't there. You know, the people are wondering why isn't the new system working with the offense? Why is the quarterback struggling? Why is Jim Harbaugh in the position he's in? They're seventh in the country, better to win than not, but they have struggled to open the season. Is that just growing pains, or is that a larger issue?
Yeah, I think if you're the coaching staff, you're just saying it's growing pains. And the bottom line is we hit our goal. We wanted to be 2-0 at this time. Hey, we're 2-0. But when you go back and dissect the film, when you watch the film, there's just some the ball's on the ground too much. There's some sloppiness there. You've got to take care of the ball better. And I want to tell you, whoever plays Army, you better buckle up. Y'all know that. I mean, that's a hard game to play. And I've had the privilege with CBS to go watch them the last 7 years. And I love the heart and spirit of their team. And I'll tell you, any defensive line will tell you, I don't want to play Army because they're coming at your knees. They're coming at you every single play. But I just think this. I think Michigan, I do think they're going through some growing pains. When you look at Shea Patterson, he's had quite a few coordinators the last few years. And I know how athletic, I know how accurate he is. I just know there's better football in front of him, but you're waiting to see it. You're waiting to say, hey, okay, come on, let's go.
Houston, we mentioned Tennessee is a disappointment. I think you could look at UCLA as another national disappointment with Chip Kelly. On the other end of the spectrum, where'd Maryland come from? Boy, I tell you what, they're 71 points per game. They're ranked now 21st. They have, they're going to play Temple, maybe a little bit tougher opponent. I didn't expect them to do to Syracuse what they did. How is Maryland off to such a good start, and how surprised are you?
Well, I'm very surprised. I looked at the first game and said, okay, wow, scored a bunch of points. Okay, against a team that's inferior. But I thought, well, okay, Syracuse now will beat Maryland. That was my thoughts in my mind going before the game. I thought, okay, Syracuse is their coach. Babers has his team going, so I know they'll win this game. And I get to watching this football game, and I looked. It's one reason. It's Coach Loxley in the offense, the creation of different formations, the motion, the deception of lightning motion, and then the play action and boots and waggles. Golly, he keeps them off balance. And his quarterback, Jackson, just looks like he's just so in sync and acts like he's had the playbook for the last 5 years. So, man, you just got to give a lot of credit to Coach Loxley. Remember, you know, he was 3-31, goes to Alabama as an analyst, and look at him. He's got it rolling. And so my hat's off to him, and I'm anxious to see as the schedule goes. You mentioned a little bit better competition. I'm anxious to see as we go through the schedule what's this going to look like, because I feel like offensively they're going to move the football.
When you see a guy like Lynn Swann step down from USC, does that send a shockwave through the program? I mean, you know, we know the whole Cliff Kingsbury thing and all the everything that happened and the state of that program. That's a big part of it. It's a big part of the reason he's leaving. I mean, obviously, you resign when you find out they're looking for your replacement. But what's your take on what's going on with that program?
Yeah, when you lose a Lynn Swann, you know, he's a guy that everybody knows his name. He walked the hallways. He practiced. He played, and All American, and a name that's in everybody knows. When he leaves, you know, it does send a little bit of a shockwave, like, hey, what's going on? But as you go back and look at the team right now, and that's where I give Coach Helton a lot of credit. When you have the outside noise and the pressure he's been under since day one. And especially this summer going in the season, and you lose your first-team quarterback. Man, I just give Coach Helton a lot of credit, and now the young freshman steps in and has a – maybe this is a blessing in disguise. They look the best I've seen them in a while. So, hey, they're 2-0, and the best thing they can do is just keep right on going. Winning is a cure-all. It solves everything. And so, hey, maybe Coach Helton can keep it going, winning, and everything's okay in the football department, and let's see who becomes the AD. But when you mention the shockwave of losing Lynn Swann, you know, the message of it, I said, okay, we're getting ready to hire who then? We're going to get ready to make a change. We lost, we moved the AD out, he's gone. So now we're getting ready to make a change. But the problem is right now USC is winning, and I'm rooting for him. I hope they keep going.
He's Houston Nutt. He's been with CBS Sports since 2012, serves as a college football studio analyst. This Saturday, he can be seen on the CBS College Football halftime shows as well as Inside College Football at 6 p.m. on CBS Sports Network. At CBS this week, you got College Football Today at 2, and Alabama at South Carolina. Alabama losing at South Carolina. I can't believe that's been predicted. No, that's not predicted. Houston, thanks a ton. I got a feeling that they're going to win. That's
thanks,
just
Houston.
Me.
Appreciate your stuff.
Yes, you bet. Thank you, guys.
All right, buddy. That's Houston Nutt. Always a joy to talk a little college football.
And, I love hearing him. Golly.
Yeah. That's what college football sounds like,
yes,
to me.
Oh,
like Houston
so
Nutt,
agree.
It's just like, yeah, college football right there.
Oh, it's perfect.
Good old boy.
Perfect.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I'm in zero panic mode. I'm in a frustration mode because I just feel like that I know we're better now. We had a great week of practice. This breaks my rule of a good week of practice and normally success. Didn't happen tonight.
Mully at Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That didn't happen for
no,
sure.
No, it didn't happen. He's not going to panic.
That's Matt Nagy.
I'll tell you some things that surprised me, though, in the aftermath of the Bears lost to the Packers.
Please.
We love candor, and we get it from the Bears, and I applaud them for that. I've been a little surprised at how...
There's a butt coming.
Direct. Well, I don't know if there's a butt coming. I've been surprised, I guess, at how direct the analysis has been, because, number one, you've got Matt Nagy, the head coach, who, in explaining why he passed on a 51-yard field goal to go for it on 4th and 10 at a very critical point in the game when it was 7-3, said he was just listening to a special teams coach. You're the head coach. Okay, you're the head coach. So
situation dictated that you go for the field goal.
I think it did. And if you don't have a 51-yard, if you don't have a kicker that you trust to kick a 51-yard field goal on an ideal night, you've got the wrong kicker. So that was number one. Number two.
So you think he was blaming the special teams?
No, I don't. But I think it was interesting that he, I don't want to say deflected responsibility.
That's what exactly what it is, though.
It's deflecting responsibility.
It's his responsibility, not, you know, you can listen to him, but you can also overrule him.
When questioned about the run-pass ratio, the fact that they were only 15 running plays and 50 called passes, a bad ratio no matter how you slice it for a team that wants to run the ball. I also found it interesting that Matt Nagy reminded us that a lot of those were run-pass options that were might have been runs turned into passes by who?
Quarterback.
The quarterback.
Mitchell Trubisky.
So the quarterback
is... So is the coach deflecting again?
The quarterback is interpreting the pass part of the run-pass option on the field.
When he said that we had 2 third-and-1s, that won't happen again, the first thought I had was, well, why not talk to the play caller? Oh, no, wait, that's you. In other words, he will not give Mitch the option of running or passing in that particular
He's lost the
moment.
Privilege. Maybe you lost the privilege of being able to check the play at the line of scrimmage if you can't call it better than you have. Okay, so, but I love the candor there because it gives us an insight into what exactly is happening. Also, along the same lines, we heard from Harry Heaston yesterday in the midst of hearing from Bears assistant coaches, and Rich Campbell helped clarify this and that. There was a blown assignment. There was a lot of, you know, Mitch was under pressure. The Packers came after him. I think they had 5 sacks. And in one of those, it was explained that it was maybe, you know, the running back, Mike Davis, would have been the guy whose job it was to pick up the blitz or the pass rusher. You don't hear that a lot, Molly. We talk to a lot of football coaches. How often do you hear an assistant coach imply something that implicates a player that isn't in his position group?
What?
I'm just saying there's
What did he say, though, about... I mean, he also, Harry, said something effectively about the crowd booing getting to the players. Now, well, he didn't say that directly, but listen to this quote.
Yeah, it was a little bit unrelated to what we're talking about, but it was also maybe not, didn't reflect well on a veteran offensive line that should be used to expectations. And this was using expectations that frankly sounded a little bit like an excuse. Harry Heaston, quote, "When the expectations are high for all of us as players and coaches, and you're not having the success you've anticipated, I think it doubles down a little bit. That was the sense I got, and we just couldn't work our way out of it."
The burden of expectation caused you to lose to the Packers? And obviously the burden of expectation caused the fans to start booing in the second quarter. That's early to be booing, but by the end of the game, it was an absolute every time, every three and out was booed.
Oh, come on. Are you going to say are you going to say cause effect there?
That seems,
the booing created...
Now, is that what he implies? He didn't say booing, but he said expectation, which is why people boo. I mean, is that an implication that booing kind of got to them? And we know that Eddie Jackson didn't like it because he came on the station at some point and talked about it.
And he'll be on Mondays at 8. We'll talk to Eddie Jackson after the Bronco
great
game.
To talk
We're
to
hoping. Look, if you are a veteran offensive line that in your offensive line room believe that you can be the strength of this team, you've got to believe that, right? If you're the offensive line, you're going to be the one that dictates the course of this of every game, of every series, that sets a tempo. You have to be immune to that kind of external noise, that kind of external pressure. Expectations cannot touch you. They cannot affect you. You're blocking. You're making room. You're protecting your quarterback. You're big, tough, strong guys. You're smart guys. Tune it out.
Kerry Vedvik available. Don't know if you saw that. Cut by the Vikings, and the Jets apparently didn't like what they saw. Let me ask you, and I mean this sincerely. Okay. I'm not making a joke. If you were offering a conditional fifth for him, would you bring him into the practice squad? Just give him a place to go. Get a sports psychologist to sit down with him. Have your kicking coordinator sit down with him, or would that put Eddie Pinheiro off the boil? Would that potentially create an issue that you don't want there? Oh, Eddie, you know, don't look over here. You know, I know his career looks like it's finished, but that was an inside joke. But we really want to just sort of try to see if we can get anything out of him to replace you.
I think it's a good question, and I think it's something that they probably will discuss or have discussed. But look, you just have to look at the evidence. They were almost afraid to try a 51-yard field goal. Why?
Because they had a kicker that they didn't trust.
And what would happen if he missed?
The crowd would boo again. And the expectation, people would demand he be cut.
So what happens if you bring in a guy who publicly has already failed? Before, when you were offering the conditional fifth-round pick for Vedvik,
you thought he was going to be
He hadn't failed yet.
Okay.
He hadn't failed for the Jets as he did. He wasn't cut by the Vikings at that time. Now you're bringing in a guy that's now 0 for his last two teams, and you're gambling more than you would have a month ago.
You could argue 0 for three teams because he started with the Ravens.
0 for three teams.
But they got an awful good kicker, so it's not fair.
But you know what I mean? The Bears are not aggressively attacking this season so far in terms of tuning out the noise. And there's a lot of it. And there's going to be a lot of it when you come off a 12-4 season, you have the NFL Coach of the Year, you come in talking Super Bowl, there's going to be high expectations.
And see, this is what I don't understand. Did the expectations sneak up on him, or did they create them and encourage them?
Tariq Cohen was using the D word in Bourbonnais. He was talking about a dynasty.
Multiple championships.
Yeah. When he was slingshotting around.
But I'm not making this up. We're hearing from the assistant coach. We're hearing about a coach talking himself out of a 51-yard field goal attempt because you're looking at it of what could go wrong rather than last year, which was, how are we going to make this right? Everything about last year was about aggressiveness, about being you.
Be you.
Who are the Bears this year?
Yeah, I don't know.
What happened to that team?
I'll tell you what, we better see it in Denver. I'm willing to give them a mulligan. It's what I do. But I take
one every day.
I simply mean that, okay, in my opinion, they weren't necessarily prepared to start the season. Is that fair to say? Because
physically,
well, whatever way,
or mentally,
well, they clearly ran afoul of something
all
in that
above,
opener.
Sir.
So it's your home opener. You lose to a division opponent. You're last place in the division. Now you go out, and here's your ex-coach, and he knows a lot about you, and you're in the thin air. And they're what 19? What was the number? They don't lose in September in that building, and it's his home opener. But it is potentially a must-win game. You go 0-2 to open the season. Now you go out there and take care of business, and you win the game, and everybody's like, "Hey, that's great! Look how smart our coach is, and look how great everybody is."
You see, now it's not potentially a must-win game. If you are the coach addressing your players again, you're not you can't be that careful. You've got to have it ingrained into their minds. This is a must-win game because you do not start 0-2 if you're a team this talented. If you have the roster that the Bears have, there's no excuse for starting 0-2, especially after what you see on tape from the Broncos. This is a team with a backup offensive tackle now. You've got a limited quarterback in terms of mobility. You've got a defense that gets after the quarterback. You've got to make your own luck. Offensively, you got to get it together. And you've got to, your offensive line has to stop worrying about everything else except for the guy right in front of him. Block. Make room. Protect the quarterback. Run the football.
Well, what bothers me about that is not that it's excuse making, because I just think I really do like, I know Harry, you know Harry, he's not an excuse guy, he's an explain guy. I think what worries me about it is they rolled into the season feeling like a million heading to the dynasty, and they got steamrolled. They found out that somebody was going to play against them, and it wasn't. There was actual physical contact, and it was football. They hadn't prepared for that, let's say, and that set them back. If you can't, as you say, aggression is the right word. If you can't take out your troubles on the next opponent, guess what? They'll take out their troubles on you. That's how this game works. You're either the hit-y or the hitter, and if you're not the aggressor, then you are the victim.
We're one game in. So we're going to try not to overreact. So this is the way I'm going to look at it. I'm going to keep an open mind. I'm going to view this as an elevated sense of accountability rather than an increased amount of finger pointing.
Boy.
Because you don't want to look at it the other way.
No, you can't look at it the other way.
So you want to look at it, okay, this is a positive step in being more accountable in terms of either assigning blame or responsibility or explaining insight into what happened.
And I think that's the way they mean it. I don't think they stop for a second and think, well, this might come across as if we're trying to pass the buck. But I don't know how you don't take a little bit of that. I said to you when we came in here on Monday morning, I said to you, I was really surprised at Nagy in the postgame. I couldn't believe a couple of the things he said, and it was honest, and it was how we felt, but it was also he seemed like he was a little shell-shocked, and
he talked about
these third and ones aren't going to happen again. Like, well, yeah. Wait a minute, then who's responsible? And it was weird.
If you're saying the third and ones aren't going to happen again, I think the first one was because of a lack of execution. He probably was just committed, we're going to block that next time.
Yes.
But the other one was like, well, we're going to take the
We're not
freedom.
Throwing a pass to Adam Shaheen or whatever Lombardi called him.
Sheelan. Adam Sheelan. Okay. Very versatile tight end.
It's all right.
But
you don't have to know the name to understand the guy can't play.
You heard a coach really committing or considering taking away the freedom from Mitch Trubisky on the run pass option.
Maybe it's just going to be a run option. Well, that would make sense to me.
Broncos didn't do a good job of containing the Raiders run game either on Monday. So right. if that's hopefully
more
something
reason,
they were paying attention
more
to.
More reason right. to run against them.
With a rookie running back, by the way. So
pretty good one, but
hint,
still.
Hint, hint, hint.
Yeah. Get your rookie. Get them all leathered up.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that at all. All right. We're going to bring in our friends and compadres. I believe Connor out today. And Matt Spiegel is in for
Spiegel's
him,
so
we'll get
to
talk to Spiegs. Right. And, of course, we've got Dan Bernstein. It's always a joy to talk to Dan.
And,
hey, clean it up. We're kind to each other in this place. Remember that. We'll bring in Dan Bernstein next, and we'll talk a little sports, a little transition, if you will, from one show to the next. All brothers in sport, all loving friends. And
Mr. Sensitive.
Mully and Haw on the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.